Well, if you will, turn in your Bibles to the book of Ruth. We're in the Old Testament, going through a series in the book of Ruth called Redemption. Ruth's right after the book of Joshua, or right after the book of Judges, actually. You'll find that there in your Old Testament. Charles Dickens, in A Tale of Two Cities, began with this famous statement. It was the best of times and the worst of times. If that doesn't explain exactly what's happening in the book of Ruth between chapter 1 and chapter 2, I don't know what else we could say. It's the best of times. Ruth has come to trust in the Lord through the witness of her mother-in-law. But it's the worst of times. Naomi and Ruth have both lost their husbands. Naomi has lost her two sons. And they are now moving back to Bethlehem, Naomi's homeland, from Moab, where they had retreated. The family of Elimelech and Naomi and the two boys had retreated during a time of famine. The best of times, it was the worst of times. What were these two widow ladies to do? In Romans chapter 8, verse 28, it says, "And we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose." How many of you believe that? You embrace that verse. It's truth. Most people will cling to this verse to feel comfort that it brings. God causes all things to work together for good. Yet have you noticed that this verse does not promise that all things will be good, that all things will be comfortable, all things will be just perfect according to your understanding of perfection? The reality is some things are just hard in life. Some things are difficult. Circumstances are not as we would plan. Life can be very painful and heartbreaking. Is Romans 8:28 still as true during those difficult seasons as it is in good, comfortable seasons? Well, most certainly. Why is it that life can be difficult and painful and heartbreaking when God says He loves us and He cares for us and He provides for us? Why is it we can still go through seasons of difficulty? As Naomi, who is a believer in the Lord, but goes through this difficult, painful situation of losing her husband and her children and can produce no more children in order to provide sons and carry on the family name. Why is it that these things happen in our lives? Well, there are basically two reasons. One is because of our own sinful choices. Sometimes we suffer the consequences of our poor choices. Children, I want you to hear that. There are consequences to every decision we make. And even if the Lord forgives you of the decisions you make, He does not always remove the consequences of those decisions. Colossians chapter 3, verse 25 tells us, "For he who does wrong will receive the consequences of the wrong which he has done, and that without partiality." That doesn't pick favorites, that they will go through life without any consequences to their actions, but others certainly will. There are difficult times in life because of poor choices that we make. But sometimes in life, hear me, sometimes in life, difficult things happen, and it has nothing to do with the choices you've made. That God, in His providential wisdom, plans, provides, and shapes opportunities for your good in the midst of your difficulties. Sometimes growth can only happen through painful times. Jesus said in John chapter 9, He saw a man that was born blind from birth. His disciples asked Him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he would be born blind?" This tragedy that he never gets to see the beauty of the day, never gets to see a sunrise or a sunset, will never see the beauty of his wife's face if he even has a wife. Why is it, whose sin is it, his or his parents? You remember how Jesus answered that? He said it was neither that this man sinned nor his parents, but it was so that the works of God might be displayed in him. There are some things in life that we will go through. And it's not because of your sins or other people's sins. It's so that the glory of God might be displayed in you. Rather than reject these circumstances, let's embrace the God who has allowed the circumstances for His glory. This is the opportunity that both Naomi and Ruth have. They are in a tough situation. They have no husband. They have no person to provide for them. Ruth has now moved into Canaan. She is a foreigner. And this is the time of the judges when every man did what was right in their own eyes, and there was much sin abounding throughout the land. And here these two widow women are moving into Bethlehem, hoping, praying, desperate that something would come of this. But they have to trust that God has allowed this, that glory would be displayed through their life. And you have to stay for all four chapters in this series in order to get the big picture. If you're not satisfied after one chapter, as many of you weren't last week, that's okay. Just come back. There's a purpose for this whole thing. Come back and hear what God is doing to display His glory through the lives of these two women and through the life of Boaz, which we'll be introduced to today. If Romans chapter 8 verse 28 is true and embraced, let me remind you of the verse, and we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose, but we also know that both our sinful choices and just God's providence in our lives brings difficulty. If we embrace verse 28, we must also embrace verse 29. Which will remind us of this. God is more interested in your conforming than He is your comfort. Verse 29 says, "For those whom He foreknew, He also predestined to become conformed to the image of His Son, so that He would be the firstborn among many brethren." So many of us are grabbing on to comfort and forgetting the conforming. That we may be going through some issues in our lives just for God's glory in order to be conformed to the image of His Son. So don't abandon God during difficult times. Don't reject the circumstances and look for other avenues to make things different. But simply grab on to the conforming aspect of this sanctifying process God is taking you through. Ruth and Naomi are going through some difficult days, yet God has not abandoned them at all. God is very present. Now this book is very interesting. It's similar to the book of Esther. In the book of Esther, God is never mentioned by name, and Ruth, He is rarely mentioned here. But you most certainly see the working of God throughout the book of Ruth. Today, what I want us to hear from God's Word is that God cares, He is in control, and He is conforming us for our good and for His glory. And there's several things in chapter 2 we could pull out, and we don't have time to comb through and grab every little particle here. But I want us to focus on three areas. And it primarily deals with the blessings of God in this chapter. God's blessings, and here's kind of the thought I want you to have throughout this chapter. God's blessings come to those who, and then we'll kind of fill in the blanks here. In verse 1, you see in the book of Ruth, now Naomi had a kinsman of her husband. Speaking of Boaz, he's a relative. He's a man of great wealth, and actually the Hebrew, the phrasing is almost exactly like they used of Gideon, a man of great valor. So when you see it saying great wealth, it doesn't necessarily mean just that he has much cash. No, he has a lot of character. And God has lifted up this man, and this righteous man, in the midst of all the unrighteousness of the land during the time of the judges. There is one righteous man, a man of great mighty valor, mighty man of valor, man of great wealth. He's of the family of Elimelech, who actually helps him to qualify as a kinsman redeemer. We'll deal more with the kinsman redeemer aspect in chapter 3. But it's kind of, the author here is just laying out that they're about to be introduced to a man who is a relative, and he's a great man, and he qualifies as a kinsman redeemer. And his name is Boaz. There's debate on what his name actually means because it's never used in any other place in the Hebrew text. But it's possible that his name means the strength of God, or he is filled with his strength. It is interesting in this chapter, a chiasm is what they call it, I believe, that Hebrew literature always writes things in ways to get to the point, so you see the point. So I'm going to give you the five chiastic perspectives here, that you're going to see Ruth and Naomi speaking. Then you're going to see Boaz speaking to his reapers. Then you're going to see Boaz speaking to Ruth. Main point. Then it's going to back up. Boaz is speaking to his reapers. And then Ruth's going to speak to her mama again. So you see kind of how the progression of thought here. We start with Ruth and Naomi, and we end with Ruth and Naomi. We have Boaz speaking to reapers, Boaz speaking to reapers. But it's bringing to the main point, Boaz and Ruth are going to start a relationship. Central point of the passage. Look at verse 2. We get into the main part of the passage now. And Ruth the Moabitess. It's fascinating that this book reminds us often that she's a Moabitess. We know that she's saying, your God's going to be my God, and where you go, I'll go, and your people are going to be my people. I'm going to go all the way to death following you, Naomi. But this book often reminds us of her past and where she's come from. Ruth the Moabitess reminds us seven times in this four-chapter book. And she said to Naomi, please let me go. I'm seeking your permission, your favor, your blessing, if you will, to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor. Also translated grace at times in certain translations. I'm asking for your favor that I may go seek favor. I'm asking for your blessing that I may go out and seek blessing. There's a perspective here that she is seeking a blessing. Point number one. There is someone in the text who desires to seek a blessing. This favor that is sought. And Ruth in her younger years here is eager to go find a blessing. They're sitting at home, sitting on the couch, wondering, what are we going to do with our lives? And Ruth is compelled. If there's ever going to be a blessing, we're going to have to go find it. Naomi, not to disrespect you in this land, but would you give me permission? Would you bless me that I may go find our blessing? And she gets this blessing. Naomi said to her, go, my daughter. And Naomi still very bitter, as she calls herself in chapter 1. She is sad, losing her husband, losing her sons. She has little motivation. She is in a state of mourning. So out of God's grace, he has connected her with Ruth, who has come to faith. And now Ruth is going to seek the blessing that will bless both of them. As a woman, as a poor widow, as a foreigner, Ruth could make no claims on anything or anyone in this land. But she has an expectancy that God has not led her here by accident, that it's not a mistake. She must get up and go find that which God brought her to Bethlehem for. She's the lowest rung of the social ladder in this land, in a very wicked time in this nation. But her situation did not deter her. I want you to hear her passion. No matter how low your life can be, no matter where you are in the circumstances of life, God has not abandoned you. And he doesn't desire for you to sit back on your pad of potential and just wish something might happen. In faith, and this is what I see as Ruth's second step of faith. Her first step was say, I'm going to follow you, and she goes to Bethlehem. The second step of faith is, I'm going to go and seek more what God is going to do for us. She is in motion. It was General Douglas MacArthur in another context that said this, there is no security on this earth, but there is much opportunity. She's in that situation. There's no security for her. But there is ample opportunity when you trust God and you move forward. So she's seeking the blessing. Most people live with this mentality. See if you've ever heard someone say this. Nothing is as easy as it looks. Everything takes longer than expected. And if anything can go wrong, it will. And at the worst possible moment. Don't look at those people if they're in the room here that you think, yes, that's what their mentality is. Might we have a Ruth-type mentality? Just taking a little liberty here, might Ruth be saying this? Nothing is as hard as it looks. Everything is more rewarding than you expect. And if anything can go right, it will, and at the best possible moment. There's a difference in perspective when you get up in the morning. What are you expecting? Ruth has a perspective that I'm going to seek a blessing. Naomi, would you allow me to go find it? They were needing provision. That's certain in the text. They needed some food. You see here that she was seeking Naomi's blessing and then the blessing of some unknown farmer. She didn't know anybody in this land, but certainly somebody would provide for them. I want to go out and glean after one whose side I may find favor. A step of faith on Ruth's part. When circumstances are difficult, you need to do one of three things, or perhaps all three things. You change your perspective, you change your position, or you change your procedure. You change your perspective. You can see things from the human perspective. There's nothing that Ruth or Naomi really could do to accomplish anything. Naomi has already admitted in chapter 1, there's nothing I can do. Even if I found a husband and I had another child, it would take forever to produce a young man to be your husband. There's nothing physically I can do for you. They're in this new land. What is Ruth going to do? She's a foreigner in a wicked land for her. It's a difficult place. What can she really do? Outside of the grace of God, there is no human explanation of what truly could happen here. But having faith, she changes her perspective. She changes her position. Instead of just staying in the house, she gets up and moves and goes, finds it. And she changes her procedure. What is she going to do to seek what God may give her? I heard this past week, actually, at the conference I was at. Someone once said, if you don't see it before you see it, you'll never see it. If you don't see it before you see it, you'll never see it. Ruth saw the favor before she actually saw the favor. And she got up to go seek that favor. That God may provide a blessing for her. Look at verse 3. So she departed and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. See, when the reaping of the harvest was there, God's people were to consider the poor and leave the extra parts, the gleaning, off on the side. It's in the Old Testament law this way. And God gave the harvest, and He has every right to tell His people what to do with the overflow. And He says, just leave it for the widows, those who needs to gather. They can't plant for themselves. Ruth not only knew what she lacked, she desired to go find it. Look at the rest of verse 3. And she happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Now, isn't that the most curious phrase in the entire Bible, if not just this book? She just happened to come upon this field that just happened to be from Boaz, who just happened to be one of the most righteous men in this wicked area, and just happened to be the person who's someone who's qualified to be a redeemer, a kinsman redeemer, and continue that line. Just happened so. Is there any just happenstance in life? Absolutely not. I think it's a curious phrase. I'm unsure why it's in there, and commentators debate it. But I'm just looking at, I know that the gracious hand of God is not just perhaps, oh, how coincidental, working. No, it's not by chance or coincidence. It's by the gracious hand of God. She didn't know who owned the various parcels of ground. There were no boundary markers and a stake of Boaz lives here or this is his field. And none of that. She just goes down and was led by God unbeknownst to her. Have you ever had that kind of circumstance where you don't know exactly what you're supposed to do or where you're supposed to go, but you just end up finding yourself in the right place at the right time? And you can't take any credit for that. You know, as smart as we are, as wise as we are, all the life experience we have, sometimes we don't have a clue. And God places us in the correct spot at the right time. And it's at that moment you better stop and realize you're walking on holy ground, because God is leading you and He deserves all the glory and praise for that. We too often take for granted that God has been leading us. We try to go in our directions, but God is directing our every step. To Him be the glory. And she's a brand new believer. She doesn't know how all this works. There's no indication that she's even praying, "Lord, just direct my step here or there." She's just going, and she happens to come on this field. God is moving in her life. And God is most certainly moving in ours, even when we're unaware. We pray and we seek His will. We make decisions, and sometimes we make mistakes. But it is God who orders the events of our lives, and He guides His children. She's out seeking a blessing. Look at the second part here in verse 4 through 16. I want us to see that there is someone who shares a blessing. Whereas Ruth was seeking a blessing, there was a favor sought. Here's a sharing a blessing, and we're going to see Boaz where favors are taught, how he teaches people to bless others. It says it now in verse 4, "Now behold, Boaz," which isn't, you know, God is his strength, "came from Bethlehem," meaning he's a local individual. He lives in town. He harvests outside of the city. There's the city where people live, and then everybody has their fields together out on the outside of the city. So he comes out to his field that he owns, and he speaks to his reapers, "May the Lord be with you." He pronounces blessings on his workers. He's a blessing giver, a favor giver. You see his character lived out. "And they said to him," likewise, they're repeating back to him, "May the Lord bless you." Now, just a little insight. I love this. When Boaz gets up this morning and he thinks, "I'm going to go and bless my workers today," and he might, you know, expect to hear back from, "May the Lord bless you," does he have any clue how God's going to bless him today? No. We talk about redemption, and we know the story of Ruth, and there's going to be this kinsman redeemer, and she's going to be blessed. She's not the only one here going to be blessed. Boaz is in the picture here. He's a blessing giver, but he has no idea how much he's going to be blessed today. He goes about his life sharing blessings. And the people speak back to him. Obviously, he has a good reputation with his workers. "May the Lord be with you." And they say, "May the Lord bless you." Right after that phrase, look at verse 5. Apparently, he notices a new young lady in town. Now, he's of some age. But in verse 5, Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" I don't know what kind of inflection that is, but I like to just kind of think. He said, she's caught my eye. Verse 6, "The servant in charge of the reapers replied, 'She is the young Moabite woman who returned with Naomi from the land of Moab.'" Oh, she has a reputation. She's already known. Verse 7, "And she said, 'Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves.' Thus she came and remained from the morning until now. She has been sitting in the house for a little while." Then Boaz hears that and makes a beeline right to Ruth. "Boaz said to Ruth, 'Listen carefully, my daughter.'" Using the phrase daughter, perhaps because he's older, mature. You see four things actually he's going to do for her. He's pursuing her here. "Do not go to glean in another field. Furthermore, do not go on from this one, but stay here with my maids," including her with his workers. He pursues her. Then he shows that he's going to protect her. In verse 9, "Let your eyes be on the field which they reap and go after them. Indeed, I have commanded the servants not to touch you. When you are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink from what the servants draw." He's protecting her. I'll remind you, this is the time of the judges, and people did what was right in their own eyes. You go back and read the book of Judges, and you see all kinds of wickedness. You see that what they would do with women, especially foreign women, was detestable that I could not even repeat in this room. Go back and read that and realize the kind of danger that Ruth was potentially in. And Boaz is stepping up and saying, I'm going to take care of you. I've already warned every one of those boys, if they touch you, they're toast. That's not in the Hebrew, but it sounds good. All right. I'm going to take care of you. I have the reputation, when I say it, it'll be done. I not only am pursuing you, I'm protecting you from abuse that could take place. And then he extends a blessing to her and praises her. She falls on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, why have I found favor in your sight that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner? Certainly she understood her position in this land. And Boaz replied to her, all that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me, and how you left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know. She might have been one of the most attractive women, not for her outward beauty, but for her inward heart that was in all the land. There's a reason Boaz was not yet married, even into his older age. He had not found a woman quite like this. May the Lord reward your work, he says in verse 12. Basically, may God bless you. He's always about blessing. May the Lord bless you and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek. Then she said in her response, I have found favor, that word once again, in your sight. I have found blessing in your sight. I found grace in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me and indeed have spoken kindly to your maidservant. Though I am not like one of your maidservants. You're treating me as an equal to your maidservants, but I'm not even worthy of being considered that. And then he provides for her. He pursued her. And he protects her, and he's praising her, and now he is providing for her. Verse 14, at mealtime, Boaz said to her, come here, that you may eat of the bread and dip your piece of bread into vinegar. So she sat beside the reapers. I mean, she got to be brought up to the main table. And he served her roasted grain. Is that like boiled peanuts? I don't know. And she ate and was satisfied and had some left. Verse 15, and she rose to glean. And Boaz commanded his servants, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not insult her. Also, you shall purposely pull out for her some grain from the bundles, and leave it that she may glean, and do not rebuke her. Her response is being overwhelmed by his grace, his favor. The very blessing that she was seeking, she received, but she got far more than she could ever have imagined. She's happy to accept the relationship of maidservant, but does not include herself as being worthy of that position. But in here, she looks away from her poverty, and she focused on his provision. That's a unique position for many of us, because it's humbling, but it's comforting. It's humbling when you say, I am without, but I know someone who has all. And I'm willing to humble myself and receive that which is given to me by the one who is full. She forgets her fears, and she begins to rest on the promises. Being a Gentile woman in the Holy Land, not having any claim to rights, but only living by the grace extended her. It reminds me of the Gentile woman, the Syrophoenician woman, who approached Jesus. She had a demon-possessed girl, and she goes up to him, and she asks for help. Please help me. And Jesus says, it's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. Dogs referring to the Gentiles, is it? Is it right for me to take the bread this is the house of bread, by the way. This is Bethlehem, you know, the bread and give it to the dogs? And she said, yes, Lord, but even the dogs feed on the crumbs from which fall from their master's table. The Gentile understood, speaking to Jesus, yeah, I'm not welcome to the table, or at least not in this culture, but even the dogs eat the crumbs, and that's all I'm asking for is the gleaning. And Jesus says to her, O woman, your faith is great. It shall be done for you as you wish. Boaz is very much in line with where Christ is. Here's a Gentile woman who's not even welcome to the table, but not only does he welcome her to the table, he's going to provide for her far more. Why? Because Ruth has a great faith in what God is doing. Like Ruth, lost sinners are outside the covenant family of God. We are bankrupt. We have no claim on God's mercy or grace. But God takes the initiative. He pursues us. He provides for us through Jesus Christ even more than we could ever imagine. Short poem someone shared says, look at self and you'll be distressed. You look at others, you'll be depressed. But you look at Jesus and you'll always be blessed. I mean, they're eating together with she's eating together with the servants. He invites her to join. He serves her. He personally serves her. He gave her more to even take home. This is really a classic love story in the common sense, but it's even far more. I mean, look at this. The boy sees the girl. The boy goes and talks to the girl. The boy takes the girl to a meal. And then the girl goes home and tells mama about it. This is what's about to happen in this kinsman redeemer situation. Look at the last one. Alright, we've had the person who's seeking the blessing. We have a person who shares blessings frequently. And then we have someone who's surprised by a blessing. Surprised by the blessing. This is where the favor is caught. It wasn't taught, it wasn't sought, it was just merely caught. Naomi in chapter 1, as we spoke of last week, Naomi was pleasant. That's what her name means. But because of the loss of her husband and both sons to death, she was left old. In chapter 1, verse 12, she is considered old. In verse 20 of chapter 1, she considers herself, by her own testimony, bitter. In our present day vernacular, we'd say she's an old, bitter woman. She's depressed. She's despondent. She sees no blessing from God, as if God had abandoned her. And there's not much improvement in her as we start chapter 2. You know, oftentimes, and I know some of you were a little concerned. I had about 4 emails and about 3 phone calls on the way I threw Naomi under the bus last week. How many of you did not email me or call me, but you wish you had? Yeah. You're like, you took dear sweet Naomi and you made her out to just be this awful wicked woman. And if I came across too strong, I apologize for that. But let me tell you this. I don't think she's as sweet and whitewashed as you think. I really do believe she was old and bitter. Yes, she had her circumstances, but here's a woman who's lived in the faith for a long time, and instead of clinging to God for grace, she recoiled. She certainly had some impact and influence on Ruth. That's to be commended. But I would not want us to airbrush biblical characters as if nothing ever bothers them or nothing is bad in their lives. Because the more we airbrush biblical characters, not seeing their faults, we airbrush our own lives, not seeing the reality of what's going on in here. The very bitterness that she was carrying, God is going to redeem her from. And the very wickedness and bitterness that we go through, that we put on a smiley face in front of the crowd, but we're really going through, God can redeem you too. God's word is rich. Let's not take Naomi and just say she's perfect. Let's say she's just a regular woman going through some difficult times and she needs God bad. And instead of rejecting him, she is going to be surprised by the blessing, and God is going to change her from bitter back to pleasant. You're going to see it as it's revealed to her. Verse 17. So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. So now, She's coming home. Ruth's coming home. She took it all up in verse 18 and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. I'm sure her eyes were as big as saucers when she saw all that Ruth was carrying. And she also took it out and gave Naomi what she had left after she was satisfied. Verse 19, her mother-in-law then said to her, "Where did you glean today, and where did you work? May he who took notice of you be blessed." All of a sudden, now she's in a position of blessing. So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz." That revelation transformed Naomi. She knew that God's hand was still at work in her life. Naomi said to the daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed of the Lord who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and to the dead." She realizes here God's hand is working. Again, Naomi said to her, "The man is our relative. He is one of our closest relatives. He qualifies to be a kinsman redeemer." What's happening here is, in chapter 1, you know why she was so bitter? Because she realized she couldn't do anything. And it frustrated her. My sons are gone. My husband is gone. There's nothing I can do to redeem this situation. And she was hopeless. And that's where we get most bitter, by the way. When we get to the end of our rope and say, nothing can be done. We can't do anything. What am I going to do? Just quit. Listen, she couldn't do anything and she's mad about it. How many of you have ever just been so frustrated because nothing's working the way you want it to and you just get mad, bitter, angry? You blame everybody else and you don't want anybody else around you. The equation that was missing here in chapter 1 was that she didn't ask, what can God do here when I can do nothing? Here, chapter 2, even though she's not seeking it, it doesn't say that she went out looking for it, she wasn't expecting anything, God shows her, what you can't do, I can do, even when you're not expecting it. And she comes out of her bitterness. She realizes that what she cannot accomplish in her humanity, he can accomplish in his divinity. And that's why she goes on. Ruth, the Moabitess, said, "Furthermore, he said to me, 'You should stay close to my servants until they have finished all my harvest.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maids so that others do not fall upon you in another field." And so she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest. And she lived with her mother-in-law. There's the end of chapter 2. There's far more in this story. You'll have to tune in next week. But I see that the truth of Jesus, when he says, with people, this is impossible. With God, all things are possible. The very verses that we like to quote in good times, but the ones we seem to forget in difficult times. With God, all things are possible, kids. I want you to know that when difficulties are before us and when it's beyond our human capacity to do anything, we're now living by faith, which God ultimately requires. God is constantly working with us. He is constantly working in us. And he is constantly working for us to accomplish his gracious purpose. John Newton, the man who wrote Amazing Grace, as he thought upon the words, he said this, "By the grace of God, I am what I am. I am not what I ought to be, how imperfect and deficient I am. I am not what I wish to be. Though I am not what I ought to be, I can truly say that I am not what I once was, a slave to sin and Satan. I can hardly say," he goes on with Paul, "by the grace of God, I am what I am." In chapter 2 of Ruth, we see three people experiencing the grace, the blessing, the favor of God. Redemption through divine blessings. Ruth was seeking it. Boaz was sharing it. Naomi was surprised by it. On that morning when they all woke up, None of them could have predicted the outcome of their day. But when you trust in the Lord, all things are possible.